A little over a month ago, I faced a 1,784-mile drive all the way from Dallas to Sacramento in order to set up a new home base for about 9 months. Now, I knew there were some things that I could not do. I could not pack up and bring everything that I wanted to, and I could not make the whole trip in one day. But, in the words of philosopher and architect Travis Price, you can't do everything, but you can do something. Don't let what you cannot do interfere with what you can do. So, I knew that I could borrow my husband's car. It's a lot bigger than mine. So I packed it full of boxes full of clothes and books and clothes. And I also knew that I could divvy up the trip into 3 days from Dallas to Albuquerque, then to Las Vegas, then on here. And I also knew that this trip would be more fun because my husband's car has satellite radio. And belting out show tunes for 1,700 miles would make the trip a whole lot more fun. So, with the advice of the village people to go west ringing in my ears, I jumped in the car and set off. Now, one of the things about the Broadway station on satellite radio is in between songs they have hosts who tell stories about the New York theater scene. And one of the hosts is named Seth Rudesky. And as I was traveling, one of the stories he told was about this charity benefit concert he was involved in about to do. And it's for an organization that helps find homes for foster kids, especially older kids. Because, of course, the older someone gets, the more difficult it is to place them. And just because you're in high school or college doesn't mean that you don't want a home or the mentorship and love of parents and siblings. So the concept behind this concert was someone who had been in foster care would come out and tell their story and include in it talking about a song that had been very important to them during that time. And then someone would come out and sing that song. Well, Rosie Perez, who's a choreographer and actress, you may know her, she was a ward of the state in Brooklyn. And when she was going through that, one of her favorite songs was from the 1975 Broadway show, The Wiz, and it's called Home. It's a pretty song. I don't know how many of you know it. The first line goes, "When I think of home, I think of a place where there's love overflowing." So I ask you, what do you think of when you think of home? And also, what is it about that that makes you consider it home? Obviously, I gave the assignment earlier to Linda, and she was able to share a few things with us, and we appreciate that. And there's a third thing I want you to think about as I talk this morning. What breaks your heart? Now, most of you all don't know me very well. In fact, some of you have no idea who I am or why I'm up here. I would direct you to the Unigram. So I thought I would tell a few stories about home so you could get to know me a little bit better. Perhaps, like you, in elementary school, you learned that song, My Old Kentucky Home, that old Stephen Foster classic with the hopelessly racist lyrics. But probably unlike you, I actually have an old Kentucky home, not far from some relatives with some hopelessly racist attitudes. I actually had two homes growing up, not at the same time. We moved. The first was a small two-story house, wood frame house, kind of towards town, in a part of town called Latonia. I'm sure you know where it is. But before sixth grade, we moved out further towards the country, kind of where suburbia, the suburbs meet farmland, into this modest brick ranch-style house. Now, one of the things about houses in Kentucky, as opposed to houses either in Texas or here in California, is a lot of them have basements. Now, I cannot begin to tell you how many hours I spent in that basement playing. We would create these elaborate musical extravaganzas with puppets. I still love the Muppets. And then sometimes we would set out the ping pong table, of course, not to play ping pong. And of course, it is ping pong in Kentucky, not table tennis. But we would set it out in order to make these huge landscapes with houses and townships with Legos and Lincoln logs, and from one end to the other would be a model train that would go from one township to the other. Now, there was a real train yard down the hill from where my grandparents lived. My dad's dad, actually built this house on the side of this hill, and he worked for decades on the railroad. He was a brakeman sometimes a conductor. Every year during the summer, I and often a cousin or two would spend a week at each set of grandparents. And I so distinctly remember lying in the second floor bedroom before I fell asleep. And of course, this was years before central air conditioning, so the windows were open so the breeze could blow through. And I would hear those sounds from the train yard, this mournful squealing of the metal tires as they slowed down against the metal of the tracks. It was the most evocative sound. Now, as much as home are these places that I just described to you, maybe the most lastingly or historic place that I would think of as home would be my mother's parents, those set of grandparents, their farm. And that's because right down from their house at this bend in the road was where my great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents' post office and general store stood. Then, up in the other direction, up this gravel road, there still stands this teeny tiny house where my great-grandparents lived, and right after they were married, where my grandparents lived up until the time my uncle was born. And this house is small enough that it makes you wonder how that happened. So in between that tiny house and that bend in the road is where my grandparents built this two-story white house, and it was finished the year that my mother was born. Then years later, off behind and to the side, they built a two-car detached garage, and my name got written in the concrete as it was being built. I was the oldest grandchild and the only grandchild at that point, so just my name is in the floor there. Then on the other side of the house was this enormous pine tree that one summer I managed to topple out of, hit the ground, scaring my grandmother half to death. Oh, good gracious gravy. How would she ever tell my parents I was killed by a pine tree? But luckily, I just broke my arm. You all may have similar or very, very different stories from either me or Linda. But I got to thinking, what is it about these places that cause it to be considered home? And I thought of four things. First, perhaps obviously, but certainly well worth mentioning, a home provided physical shelter. That small two-bedroom house in Latonia was not enormous, but that's where I ran to find shelter during the summer when it started raining, or in the winter in the cold when I'd been out too long and had been building snowmen outside or a snow fort. Second, it was also home because it was where my immediate family lived, and it's where I felt loved and taken care of. Of course, it was similar at my grandparents' house as well that I described. These were places where I felt loved and welcomed. Third, I consider those places home because I felt safe there. Not just physically, but from bullies at school and from the snow, wind, and rain. Also safe to explore who I was, playing with puppets instead of throwing a football, enjoying reading, doing art projects. Home is where I could be me. Fourth, home was home because I knew it would be there. When I walked home from school, the house and my mom were going to be there. Soon my dad would be home from work. It was even more the case with my grandparents' house. My immediate family moved, but my grandparents were always in the house next to the pine tree I fell out of. I moved away to college, then grad school, then Texas, but they were still there, like a perpetual underpinning to my life. Now, I am really, really aware that I am breathtakingly lucky to have such positive memories of home. A friend once described my upbringing as Ozzie and Harriet as painted by Norman Rockwell. It might sound like paradise to some. And speaking of paradise, there are those, especially back in Texas, who will proudly tell you that heaven is their home. And they'll often smile and add, "But I'm not homesick." Well, in the classic... In the classic To Kill a Mockingbird, Harper Lee wrote, "There are just some kind of men who are so busy worrying about the next world, they've never learned to live in this one." And you can look down the street and see the results. You use are famously more concerned with this world than the next, and treating those in this world with compassion and respect. So when we learn of people who aren't as lucky as I was with a loving, stable home, we can become concerned and want to help. And I'm not going to pretend that everyone inside these walls has a perfect home, and those who need help are only the ones out there, outside the walls, not a part of our community. The first thing I want to make clear is that a reason that each of us is a part of this community, of this society, is to help one another. If you need help, let us know. So let's go back through the things that I mentioned as qualities that make a home a home. I talked about home being home because I knew it would be there. I talked about home being home because, I knew it would be there, but when I came home, it was there. But it didn't last. Of course, my grandmother died a few years ago, just shy of her 97th birthday. The land where their house stood was sold, and the new owners tore it down to build a bigger house. The garage with my name in the floor is still there, but the house isn't. I know all this because I've been told. I really haven't had the heart to drive by when I've gone home to visit. But this impermanence is nothing compared to those bombed or chased out of their homes without a moment's notice during a war or a country's internal struggle. I can't imagine having a home, then suddenly not having a home, then not having a country, as many have no option but to flee. This leads directly into another quality I brought up. We want to feel safe at home. With war all around, or even inner city violence on the street corner, and when some families even fear those sworn to protect them, people won't feel safe. And unfortunately, some don't feel safe within the walls of their home. I recently attended a workshop for clergy where we learned about the rampant domestic violence problem in Sacramento County. On average, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the United States. If I make nothing else clear this morning, I want to make this clear. If you or someone you love is a victim of domestic violence, and that isn't just physical, it can be emotional or verbal as well, please reach out to us or someone else you trust. You do not deserve to be treated that way, no matter what has been said to you, and we will connect you with resources to help. I also spoke of feeling safe to be oneself at home, a place where a person can feel loved and welcomed. In America, it's estimated that there are 1.6 million youth homeless each year, and that up to 40% of them identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. So let me be clear about this as well. Parents have not failed if they have an LGBTQ child, but they have failed as a parent if they have thrown their child out of the house for being who they are. And on the most basic level, a home is a home because it provides shelter. I just mentioned homeless youth. That was 1.6 million homeless youth in America. Imagine if you were to add up all age groups. On any given night, just in Sacramento County, more than 2,600 individuals experience homelessness. Just in Sacramento County, more than 8 times the number of people in this room. And an estimated 5,200 will become homeless over the course of a year. There are many reasons for homelessness, including, of course, poverty, unemployment, poor physical or mental health, and domestic violence. And tying directly into our theme of economic inequality is the problem of affordable housing. My mom and dad bought that small house on only my dad's salary. My mom didn't work outside the home, and there were 3 kids. My dad has nothing beyond a high school education. So let's take a family like mine then, and transport them across time and space and put them in Sacramento County now. According to the living wage calculator online, a living wage for this family of 5 is $30.13 an hour. The poverty wage for this family is $13. And of course, as I understand it, the minimum wage is still $9. This is why there are people in America who work full-time and who are homeless. Working 40 hours a week doesn't mean you can afford an apartment, let alone put down a down payment on a house. In Terrence County, where Fort Worth is, there are no apartments that someone working full-time for minimum wage can afford. None. I know this because during seminary, I worked in a mission in Fort Worth that did outreach for the poor and homeless. We had a free clothing store and food pantry, provided sack lunches, did laundry, and each fall we had a coat day where a new winter coat was given to each person. Yes, it gets cold enough for a winter coat in Fort Worth. Perhaps most important, we saw each person. Not just looked at them, we saw them.
when everyone else in their lives, families, strangers on the street, avoid eye contact and pretend they don't exist, we saw them and we listened to them. In an essay, the UU minister Emily Gage names the truth that everyone deserves compassion and respect, which she sees as a combination of our first two UU principles. She writes, "The second principle of Unitarian Universalism, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, is a natural and inevitable outgrowth of the first, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Why else would we treat others with compassion? Why else would we work to promote justice and equity? Inherent worth and dignity is the foundation for our ethical behavior." I contend our work is here for results now, not in a heavenly home. I believe social justice work is our work. Excuse me. And I believe that service can be a spiritual practice. But what can we do? I have been a huge Debbie Downer this morning, giving you mind-numbing lists of statistics. I've given you more issues than any one person could possibly address. But like Travis Price said, you can't do everything, but you can do something. Don't let what you cannot do get in the way of what you can do. There was a third thing I asked you to think about earlier. What is it that breaks your heart? Start there. Maybe it was something I talked about. Maybe it's something I haven't even gotten to yet. Maybe it's something you could work on that Lucy mentioned earlier. Maybe it's working with legislators to get a living wage for people. Maybe it's working with homeless LGBTQ youth or working with our refugee program or Habitat for Humanity or a Family Promise. What is it that you can work on? What is it that you think of when you think of home? What is it that breaks your heart? Start there. You can't do everything, but you can do something. Don't let what you cannot do interfere with what you can do. Amen.